Today's episode of the Uplifter Podcast is brought to you by Outer Known Clothing, a clothing brand founded by pro surfer Kelly Slater, where over 90% of their products are made from organic, recycled, or regenerated materials. They are set out to change the clothing industry by building clothing in harmony with the planet, as well as taking care of the people they work with while creating durable and desirable products that stand the test of time. Visit outerknown.com today, and for 25% off, use our promo code COASTIN. Again, that's outerknown.com with the promo code COASTIN for 25% off at checkout. On today's episode of the Uplifter Podcast.
But, you know, first time I saw you on the Allstate commercial on the bus, I was freaking out. And then another time I was so into Westworld, an HBO series, and you had that cameo as one of the soldiers of the Cowboys. Sure. And I was like, wait, I know him. Yeah. So it's been really cool to just follow your career. And
thank you.
It's awesome, dude. And you're only going up.
What's up, everybody? Welcome to Irations, the Uplifter Podcast. My name is Drake Peterson, and here is Mr. Adam Taylor for the all-new Uplifter. What's up,
Drake? What's up, guys? How you living, Drake?
I am doing pretty good. How about yourself? What have you been up to?
Not much. I just had a pretty fun surf session with Joe down here at our local at C Street in Ventura. Waves are pretty fun. Starting to feel a little more like winter.
Are you going to be hitting the slopes at all? This season?
Every season. And actually, it's funny, a lot of the mountains are opening mid-November. I think Mammoth opens on the 14th. And they're forecasting rain tomorrow. We'll see. But I know there's kind of our first winter storm is about to hit. So we'll see.
Amazing. Let us pray. Amazing. That's the pretty cool thing about living in California is you can go to the beach, you can go hiking, or if you want to, you can actually go up into the mountains. All very... very fast drive.
That's correct. And actually, believe it or not, but going to high school with the boys on the Big Island, we would go up to the volcano, up to Mauna Kea, and in the winter you could snowboard, but what we'd usually do is bring a boogie board and just kind of slide down like a sled, and then that afternoon get to the bottom of the mountain and go surfing. So you could do both in one day as well.
Dude, that's badass. And you're going to Hawaii pretty soon, yeah?
Yeah, I'm going Monday.
Oh my God.
Yeah, so excited to go get some waves on the North Shore, see my family, and kind of kick back and enjoy the island lifestyle.
What's the process of going to Hawaii right now?
Okay, so they just got rid of the 14-day mandatory quarantine, which is great. They now are requiring a NAAT COVID test, which I went and got this morning. Results will be there in about 2 days. And
what's that? NAAT?
It's just a specific type of COVID test, and you actually self-administer it. I've been tested a few times before where the nurse does it. It seemed the same, but it gets sent to a lab where I believe they test it a little bit more efficiently. The difference is it's not free, too. They cost $150. But so they have you do that. Then within getting your negative result, you have to have your flight within 72 hours. And then they they temperature check and have you kind of fill out a questionnaire when you land. And then you make a profile on the State of Hawaii website and kind of have to check in every day with how you're feeling, any changes and stuff like that. So.
Wow.
It's definitely stricter, but it's not as strict as having a mandatory 2-week quarantine. So,
are the numbers pretty low in Hawaii? I haven't really checked at all. But I know like in New Zealand, I was talking to someone and they have one person it there.
I think they're averaging about 100 cases a day. But I mean, in the scheme of things, I mean, there's millions of people in Honolulu alone, so. Actually, I might need a fact check on that number, but hey.
So why don't you tell everybody what we're doing here? Like, Uplifter is getting a little bit of a facelift.
Yeah, so we're doing a bit of an uplift facelift. So we kind of wanted to pivot, and you know, the creation of the Uplifter was at the start of the pandemic to kind of bring good news in a time when we were just hearing awful news nonstop. now I feel like what we want to do is, you know, with our network of people that we've met through music, is we want to introduce interesting people who we think our fans would like to learn about, and kind of give a backstage pass into their lives. So, you know, other musicians, actors, athletes, people that I feel like anybody would want to get to know, and kind of just deep dive and also streamline it a little bit. So instead of having the whole band, I think having each of us come on and, you know, having one or two of us kind of interview and share, swap stories with people that are friends in our lives, that kind of, I guess we share the bond of music, and just kind of deep dive into what they do.
I'm very excited because I'll be meeting some new people that I've never met before, and I'm excited about that.
Yeah, I think it's pretty cool. I mean, all of us, you know, like, you've got one side that's really into golf and one side of the band that's really into surfing, and we have a very, like, eclectic group of friends, so I feel like you're going to get a whole smorgasbord of people that are going to bring something very interesting to the show, and it'll be kind of cool to just kind of look into their lives and see how they live and how they got to their, to, you know, the top of their careers, and how they're handling COVID, and yeah, just kind of give a backstage pass into what they're doing.
And if you're listening for the very first time, this is brought to you by the band Iration. If you're not familiar with the band Iration, well, go on Google and type in Iration, or go on Spotify, and you're going to see a lot of music that you've most likely heard. Adam, how many times have you gone up to somebody and they've asked, like, hey, what do you do? And you tell them what you do, and then you tell them that you are part of the band Iration, and they've probably never heard, they've never heard the name, and then they go and listen to the music, and they're like, oh my God, I've heard all of these songs.
You know, I love when that happens, and it's funny too, because you kind of get, I've noticed a lot for me, I usually, when someone asks what I do, I'll just say musician. And, you know, I feel like a lot of times that can have a bit of a negative connotation where people are like, oh, that's sad. And then maybe you say, when they ask, you know, is there a band, then Iration. And then especially if they know it, then they get really excited. So
yeah.
I kind of love leading with musician, just to try and break down that barrier and that stereotype, because it's like, you know, your favorite athlete, actor, actress, musician had to start somewhere. And it's like, you know, everyone has to sacrifice and grind, and, you know, everyone's trying to get better. So I'm trying to break down that barrier a little bit.
Who's going to put on the best show, you think, other than yourself, obviously, but out of the other guys, Kaysen, the Micahs, Joe, who's gonna be the best?
I have a feeling Kaysen is gonna come out absolutely blazing and come out of quarantine. Like, he's a performance artist. I think he lives for that, and I think he's gonna come out absolutely hot. Hot and heated.
With his keytar.
Oh yeah. We got a lot of new instruments hitting the streets, and the keytar is coming in hot.
Amazing. All right. So who are you bringing on to the Uplifter today?
Drum roll. So today is a good friend of mine that I grew up with in Hawaii, Hollywood actor Ka'iwi Lyman Mercero. He's a really good friend of mine, and he's a really good guest because he's, you know, just like, I feel like we've had a very parallel career with music where it's been a steady uphill grind.
All right, everybody, joining us from Southern California is an actor. You can see him on projects like Den of Thieves, American Horror Story, The Outsider, American Violence, Westworld, and a ton of other films, TV shows, and even commercials. Joining us is Ka'iwi Lyman Mercero. What's up?
What's up, Ka'iwi? Good to have you, my friend.
Thanks for having me, guys.
Did I butcher your name? I think I butchered your name. Huh?
I'm used to hearing it pronounced so many different ways for the last 20 years that'll last.
So a little backstory. So Ka'iwi and I grew up together in Hawaii, and we both went to Punahou High School, where actually Obama went. He was a few grades below me in my brother's grade. And
to
then,
be clear,
coincidentally,
me, not
we both
Obama.
That's right. We both ended up moving to Venice Beach, California, and it's kind of interesting. We had a very kind of parallel rise in our careers where we were, you know, kind of grinding it out. And I was telling Drake, I remember, you know, when I was still working surf camps and trying to do gigs, I remember you were also like would wait tables and you were having, you know, some smaller roles in films. And then I remember the first time I got onto a tour bus and had a national tour, I was in somewhere like Oklahoma, and I saw you riding a motorcycle on an Allstate commercial.
Oh, that's rad.
Do you remember that?
I think so, yeah. You sent me a photo, right?
I think I did. So are you pretty big into riding bikes?
I was huge into riding motorcycles for a very long time until I got in a wreck right before my first son was born. And after I had rolled down Santa Monica Boulevard, I stood up and did like a systems check, and thankfully I was all right for the most part. And I looked right across the street and it was the doctor's office where me and my wife had been going to see the ultrasound of my son. So I was like, if that's not a sign from the universe to cut it out, then I don't... So I sold all my bikes. I mean, I'll ride still with like friends, but I don't own any motorcycles right now.
Damn, that is very like interesting that you had that kind of epiphany. And if that happened to me, I would definitely quit riding too.
Yeah, it was pretty outer worldly. So I got away very lucky.
So what brought you to Venice Beach, like, initially? Did you move to California specifically to pursue a career in acting?
Yes, I did. I did. I graduated, it was May, and I think I was in California by July. Originally, I was actually playing music in a high school band, and my parents were like, if you want to stay here and play music, you can get a job and pay rent, or we'll help you pursue your career in acting. And I was like, oh, well, that's a no-brainer.
Wow.
So they kind of lit the fire and helped me, you know, get out here quicker than I probably would have on my own.
And like, how do you start, like, jumping into acting? Like, is it auditions? Do you have to get an agent? Like, how does one start getting into that?
Asking for a friend.
Yeah. Well, you're so handsome, bro. You work all the time, man. You're going to be a star. No, I had some pretty shady incidents, you know, in the beginning when I first moved out here, because I didn't know anyone and I didn't know anything. I just knew that I wanted to act, and I had done, you know, a ton of theater back in Hawaii. I mean, the advice that I would give people is, you know, you need to find an agent that you don't pay unless they get you work, because there's a lot of like scam. Mm-hmm. I got scammed when I got out here. I got a guy ripped me off a bunch. And he was like, oh yeah, you gotta give me money and then I'll represent you. And that's not how the industry works. I finally locked in an agent, and they started submitting me on projects, and I started booking, and that's that.
How long do you think it took before you got your first role from when you did like your first auditions and stuff like that?
I was out here maybe about a year, kind of just floundering, to trying to understand like what to do. And I came out right on the cusp of my first job, the first feature I booked, which was this zombie surf horror movie that we shot all in Mexico, which was awesome. I think, I mean, awesome at the time for being a, you know, a 20-year-old kid who had never done acting in a film before.
Yeah.
You know, we went to Mexico for 2 months and shot this really fun little low-budget horror film. But, you know, I remember it like it was yesterday. What was the question?
just your first gig. Oh, yeah. Like, how did you...
He asked how long.
That's right. My wife's laughing at me. I was about a year, and I was on the cusp of kind of the, I would put black and white headshots in a manila folder and write with my hands, like the address and lick and put the stamp and send hundreds of those out to casting directors and projects. And then like a year later, it just went all electronic and it was just click, click, click. I mean, it was just a world of difference.
Yeah, it's got to be crazy because I remember when I was still also hustling before our band kind of was doing anything, I worked at a casting agency as the check-in guy. And I would take the headshot or I would take a Polaroid, attach it to the headshots and, you know, I'd put it in the stack and it was crazy because there'd be 30 or 40 people and it'd be funny because it would be for a specific role so they all had that kind of similar look and I was just like, dude, this has got to be so daunting showing up.
Everyone looks like, and some guys are wearing the exact same thing as you. You're like, what?
Ugh. Exactly. Yeah. Jeez. So what would you say is, you know, so you had that zombie horror flick. I think I read somewhere that you were in Sharknado versus Crocosaurus. Is that right?
No, that's actually not true.
It's not? Oh, no.
I think it's on my IMDb, and I don't know why. It is. But I did do a film called Mega Python versus Gatoroid, which is this,
which is
probably the same level of awesome horribleness. And it's the same company, this company called Asylum, that they kind of do like, like if War of the Worlds is released, they do War of the Planet. You know, they kind of do like a lower budget version ripoff of... of like larger movies.
Yeah, and I'm sure there's like a small like cult following that loves
not even
those
small,
really like
I mean it's huge. I mean a lot of these because they're just pumping out, you know, like 12 or 14 features a year, which is insane. You know, I can only imagine that these are like, because they're mainly like Sci-Fi Channel, like these are just drinking game movies. Like you go and you watch it with your buddy and you're like, all right, this guy's head's going to get eaten by a snake. Let's take a shot.
So let's fast forward, like, you know, so Den of Thieves was a huge Hollywood like blockbuster film, acting alongside Gerard Butler. And 50 Cent was in it, I believe.
50 Cent was in it.
So was it a gradual rise to get there?
Sure.
Or was there any kind of spikes or anything that you remember where your career kind of jumped up to like where you felt like, okay, you're now at this upper echelon? Like, I mean, that movie is everywhere. It's a huge, huge movie and you have a huge role in it. And great job, by the way. I love that film.
And I actually just finally read the script for the sequel. Which is, I'll just say it's even better.
Awesome. Wait, is this breaking news? That's really... Did we just break some news here on the uplifter?
Oh, yeah. I don't even know if I'm supposed to say that. Well, you heard it first from me.
Yes, broken.
Call the publicist stat.
Yeah. That's all I will say.
So what was that like? Like, what's 50 Cent and Gerard Butler like to work with?
So 50, what surprised me most about him is how that man is very... very funny. Very funny. He actually hit on my pregnant wife the entire time, but in good spirit, like just really like
bless him. Like
very funny. They're talking about 50 Cent. Yeah.
Bless his heart.
No, but it was he's a lovely, lovely, lovely man. And Jerry, as Gerard goes by, is beyond a friend. He's a brother. I just came back from doing a movie with him again in Atlanta.
Is that Copland? I just was reading about
Cop
that.
Shop.
Cop Shop.
Yeah, Cop Shop by Joe Carnahan's directing it, and Frank Grillo is in it.
Very cool.
Yeah, Frank Grillo, Joe Carnahan, those guys are... they're awesome.
So it seems like you and Jerry had a really good rapport. Yeah, it's cool to hear that you guys are friends in real life.
We connected on like a younger brother, older brother level, like immediately and stayed. I mean, I've stayed close with everyone in kind of the regulator group. And even some of the bad guys like Pablo Schreiber, I've stayed close with, who played Merryman. But yeah, Jerry's probably the closest to my heart. I think because we share the same horrible humor. I told him a joke our first night we met, and he was the only one at the dinner table that laughed because it was such a...
Awesome. Let's hear the joke.
So,
I mean, I don't know. You guys can cut it out, but It goes, mind you, I'm sitting with the whole cast, the director, producer, and everyone's told jokes. So I'm like, all right, I'll do one. And nobody laughs except for Jerry. But it goes, I call it my onion joke because it has layers. It goes, so I was going down on this girl the other day, and all of a sudden I tasted horse sperm. And I was like, ew, grandma, is that how you died?
Oh my God.
There's a few layers on there, and I'm feeling emotions that are coming in waves.
That's why it's called the onion joke, because there's so many layers.
Yeah, you got to peel it.
Yeah.
That's
whether
really
or not
good.
It makes your guys show, it's up to you.
It's going to stay.
So, okay, so Kiwi, let's talk Cop Shop. Yeah. What is it like acting during COVID? I mean, what kind of like precautions are you guys taking? Like, yeah. What is it like being on set in this time?
Yeah, so this was the first job I've had in the new era. And besides testing and wearing masks, the only big difference that I notice is that there is kind of a separation from everyone, which is sad because I always talk about, you know, making movies and TV and anything in this industry is you know, it takes a family village to do it. And you become a family very quickly with a group of people in a very short amount of time. You know, short, even if it's a couple weeks, a couple months, whatever, it inevitably, you're not going to be together because that is the nature of the industry. Everyone goes and starts doing other stuff. But fortunately, after a couple weeks of testing, you know, we're testing all the time as an actor, we're called in the red group because we're the most exposed because we don't have protection on all the time when we're in front of the camera. I still got to hang out a lot off camera with a bunch of the cast and became very close with them. But usually there's still like a mingling with the crew and stuff. And at least with me, that my personality, I like to know everybody on a first name basis. But
that's awesome. So also like, you know, on a movie like Den of Thieves, like, so you were part of the cops. It was like there was like cops and robbers kind of thing. So the cop crew was the regulator.
Yes.
So before you guys shoot, do you guys have a little time to kind of make friends? Like, because it seems like it's like you kind of have to already have, you don't want to just show up with a stranger like that on film. It's not going to vibe. Like, so do you guys, how do you guys like approach that before you start?
Yeah, so that's, I mean, that's not always the case, but our director, Christian Gudiges, who is also producer and writer of the film, was smart enough to bring all of us out, bad guys included, with the regulators, about a month early before principal photography, and basically put us into like boot camp opposite of each other. So we each had our own tactical advisors. The regulators had a bunch of guys that, you know, work SWAT, that are still working SWAT and that are like, you know, operatives, undercover police officers, all training us in that aspect. Whereas the bad guys had kind of a military, you know, mercenary strategist on their side. But we'd be on these huge fields doing these like gun maneuvers, kind of like already kind of building up like the, all right, who's better than who type thing. But then after that, we're eating dinner every night together. You know, we're hanging out 24/7. Jerry, you know, once he rented a cabin in the woods of, you know, the Blue Ridge Mountains in Atlanta for us. And we all went up and just, you know, had like a boys weekend and went skeet shooting. And yeah, so we became very close in a month. So all that played on the screen, I feel. And I think that's,
yeah, totally.
That chemistry is very important. And that's, you know, sadly, that's, you know, what COVID has done is tried. It's not, in my experience, hasn't taken away too much from it, but is trying to kind of separate that where it's like because on this last film, Cop Shop, there's a lot of days where I show up and I'm just like, oh, hey, we're going to be working together. Like we've known each other for 50 years or however many years. And this is the first time you and I are meeting. But I feel like it's going to go back to normal, hopefully soon.
Yeah, I hope so too. So, like, as far as like special effects, you know, when someone gets shot in the movie, is there something? Yeah. No, but is there something like under your shirt, or like how do you get that effect?
Yeah,
of,
so that's so you know a bullet. So there's obviously, and I've done this many times. There's what's called a squib, which is basically a small explosive, for lack of a better term, that they hook up under your wardrobe with a wire attached to, you know, anything from high tech, you know, wireless control to a what I've worked with a car battery before. So you're basically hooked up to a small explosion. And in front of that explosive, they put a blood pack. So when you get shot, they trigger that. And it's just like a firecracker going off, but it sprays like blood. I'll text you after this in this thing of my knees getting shot.
Okay, you can, sounds if cool.
You play it, yeah, if you play it in slow motion, you can see all the squibs, I mean, exploding. But it just looks like someone shot out both my knees. Spoiler
that must
alert.
Be wow. Really stressful when you because you have to it must take so much time to set it up, and then you have to do it a second time, like you don't want to mess it up the first time, like you don't want it to be your fault.
Exactly. So you want your acting to be really good when they come up and they say, we have two pairs of pants and that's it. And everyone's hoping that you get it right.
That kind of reminds me of Tropic Thunder when they like blow the jungle up.
Yeah.
I think he said go. That was $2 million worth of explosives.
Exactly. Yeah.
So Kiwi, do you have, you know, do you have a dream role or something that you want to achieve in acting in your career?
That's a great question. I love working. I think I love working on stuff that I think earlier on in my career, it's just I was saying yes to everything because I needed to work. And now getting a little bit of the luxury to say no to stuff is actually more meaningful than saying yes to everything, you know, because that opens doors to possibilities that I've always wanted, but I've always wanted to do a war movie. Always wanted to do like a really cool sci-fi like drama or something. I mean, if Star Wars ever knocked on my door, I would say hello.
Oh, that'd be a dream role.
Oh God, I mean, that's what got me into acting was Star Wars.
Really?
I'm not like a huge like I couldn't tell you about everybody or everything, but I remember as a young kid I was always watching like Disney VHS tapes, and one night my mom brought home I think it was Return of the Empire. No, or The Empire Strikes Back. No, it was what's the third one?
Return of the Jedi?
Thank you, Return of the Jedi. Jesus, yeah, I'm clearly not a super fan. But I watched it and I was like, what the f*** is this? And you know, I say without knowing exactly what that was, I was like, I don't know what that is, but I want to do that. And so here I am.
Very cool. And cheers to you. Here you are. And it's funny because, you know, we know so many people that do, you know, move to LA and did just how you did it, where you start kind of doing a job like a waiting tables and going to auditions. And I mean, props to you, man. You've made it happen, and it's so cool for me, especially to see you.
Thank you, brother.
You know, from the very first time I saw you.
Likewise.
Thank you. But, you know, first time I saw you on the Allstate commercial on the bus, I was freaking out. And then another time I was so into Westworld, an HBO series, and you had that cameo as one of the soldiers of the Cowboys, sure. And I was like, wait, I know him.
Yeah.
So it's been really cool to just follow your career and...
Thank you, buddy.
I mean, it's awesome, dude. And you're only going up, so it's really cool.
Thank you.
Today's episode of the Uplifter Podcast is brought to you by the Iration Patreon. That's Patreon, patreon.com/iration. For just $3 a month, which is the price of a basic drip coffee, or if you're into this, a can of spam, you can get access to exclusive posts, updates, and full episodes of the Uplifter podcast ad-free. So there won't be any ads, there will not be any censoring, and you can also watch it on video. Okay, so that's an exclusive benefit that's only $3 a month. If you want to pay a little bit more, you can get some free MP3 downloads, exclusive releases available only for our Patreon subscribers, which are live performances, acoustic demo covers, or even just fun tracks that guys are messing around with at home. You can also have access to iRation's full media archive. So anything that we have video-wise or audio-wise, we're going to give you access to it. All you have to do is go to patreon.com/iRation. That's patreon.com/iRation. What was the worst job that you had in Los Angeles while you were becoming an actor, a famous actor?
What's the worst job I had in Los Angeles while I was becoming an actor? It's funny that you asked that, Drake, because a lot of stuff, you know, everything tests or auditions out here, you have your meetings out here, but not a lot of stuff shoots here.
I mean like a waiting job or like a job.
Oh, not just acting?
Yeah.
Oh, I was like,
now we need both. Yeah,
both.
Oh yeah. You know what, I did it for about a decade, like bartending and waiting tables. I was always good at it because I consider myself pretty an approachable people person. But I've also gotten fired a lot from those jobs, just because I was always like, well, I don't need this. I'm an actor, even though, you know, I'd be like dead broke. I did in fact need it. But let's see.
But dude, that's kind of like the mentality you need to have. Like,
well,
it's like,
that's
hey,
the thing.
Even when you're not there, mm-hmm. I'm an actor.
Well, that's,
so,
you know,
that
a lot of
space.
People are like, you know, when I was starting off, they're like, well, what's your backup plan? And I was like, I didn't go to college. Like, I went to like a semester or two, and then I booked that zombie surf horror film Trespassers. And I went, you know, I went to this class and I was like, fuck you, you're cool, I'm out. And I never went back to school. You know, I studied, but I never went back to college because I had a clear vision from when I was very young what I wanted to do. And there was nothing that college had to offer me. I'm not saying that college is obsolete. I'm just saying for me, it wasn't important because I knew if I had given myself a plan B, a backup plan, then that you're already setting yourself up for failure.
Yes.
And with this, especially with this industry, and I think the music industry, you can't have failure floating around in the back of your mind. It has to be your oxygen. It's either you live with it or you can't live without it. You know what I mean? Like,
absolutely.
Like you can't set yourself up to fail.
No, totally. And it's funny because I was telling Drake earlier, like when you're first starting in acting or music, mm-hmm. you know, when you tell people what you do, you know, you kind of always get that response, like, you know, it's a hobby, like, kind of like, but what are you going to do?
Yeah.
And then once you start booking stuff and doing well, then everyone's happy for you. But it's like, I wish I could break that barrier with people and tell them, like, look, every one of your favorite athletes, musicians, actor, actress has had to start somewhere. So it's like, you should always support people that are pursuing the arts and their dream, you know, instead of just following that path of high school, college, 9 to 5, you know, if you've got a passion for something, follow it.
Yeah, there's something that resonated with me that I heard in a Jim Carrey interview that he said about his father. And he said his father told him that you can fail at something you don't love, so you might as well fail at something you do love.
Love that.
Yeah,
I love that too. That's awesome.
I think I might be butchering the quote, but it was along those lines. And, you know, it makes total sense. Like, why would I, you know, work a 9 to 5 and then in the back of my mind be like, oh, man, I should really start trying to pursue acting now.
Yeah, exactly.
When
you got to do it well.
Yeah, just go 100% acting. And, you know, if I fail, but it's the law of averages. Like, you keep doing something And it's a universal law. You cannot deny it. If you keep doing the same thing over and over, you will succeed. That's not just a happy thought. That's a universal physical law.
Absolutely. It's like, and what's even crazier is right now during this COVID era, people are having to reinvent themselves. Sure. You know, still trying to, whether it's be an actor, a musician, or even, you know, a real estate agent. Like, it's crazy to see, like, the people who are very good at what they do, they will reinvent themselves and figure out how to how to still work.
What are you guys doing music wise? Like, I can't. That's
you're looking at it right now, my friend.
Okay. Yeah, no, so no, exactly like you're talking about reinventing. Like, we've been focusing on other stuff. Like, I saw
that you were teaching.
Yeah, I've been doing bass and ukulele lessons on the side. I invested in a CBD company, so I've been doing that, and then also this podcast, and then we've been doing live streams, so doing pre-recorded concerts, and yeah, just trying to keep busy, and also at my home studio making music, and
that's beautiful.
Yeah, just trying to stay creative so you don't get stagnant.
Insane. Yeah, during the whole shutdown, like, I was starting to lose my mind creativity-wise. So I actually shot two films by myself, one in my storage unit and one in the condo. I shot everything. I did two like little weird horror films.
I saw that, the red light, yeah, on your YouTube?
Yeah.
I watched it.
Oh, I got to check it out.
Don't watch it. Oh, come on.
No, we're gonna snip it in a really good section right here.
Well, actually, if you're gonna snip anything, and snip in the red light, because that's when my mullet was coming in really beautiful. I spent the whole quarantine growing my dream mullet.
It looks good. I like it.
Well, they cut it off for the movie. When I got to set, they're like,
"That's the first thing they did was." Hair and makeup's that way. Get your ass over there and let's get that thing taken care of.
Yeah.
Okay. So Kiwi, I have to ask because
this is, you know, great. I
feel
like every guy in my age group worshipped Denise Richards.
Oh.
So you, and I know wifey's probably in the room, but you worked alongside her in American Violence. What was that like? Is she as great as I imagine her to be?
She is. Wonderful. They're asking about Denise Richards. Oh, and my wife. My wife goes, I thought you were talking about me.
We were.
And before you answer this, a little side note. Denise Richards has made a large comeback because of The Real Housewives of Beverly Hills. And we have a lot of female listeners too. And so they are going to love that you have worked with her. So
wonderful. Well, I have nothing negative to say about Denise at all. She is a wonderful, wonderful woman. She's a very generous artist. We had that, if you've ever watched that film, there's this kind of scene where my character in the present is being interviewed by her in kind of like this cage. It's very like Silence of the Lambs type setup. And we shot that in the course of 2 days. And we shot 20 pages in 2 days. And just to kind of give you 20 pages of dialogue in 2 days.
Whoa.
Yeah, so I would say a page, then she would say a page, and then I would say 2 pages. And she would, you know, just to give you an idea of that, like on a normal day filming, like say Den of Thieves, we'd shoot 2 pages, 2.5 pages maybe. But that's money. That's money and time. Money buys you time, so you can, you know, have less stress. And this was, we didn't have the money, so it was a very condensed shooting schedule. But she came in late into it. I had already been prepping for this scene. I didn't even know who the actress was. I think a week or two before we started shooting that.
Wow.
And when I saw it was her, I was like, oh, all right, this is gonna be rad. 'Cause, you know, I'm same age as you guys, and I know all about Denise.
Well, for the record, I'm 10 years younger than Adam, so.
That's true. Adam looks great for 50.
So, Denise Richards, Drake, just so you know.
I know who Denise Richards is.
So, Wild Things was a huge hit for all of us. Also, Starship Troopers.
Oh,
I love that movie. I love that.
I just was just binge watching clips of that like on YouTube the other night.
Well, and Denise always, she always seems to play alongside another really hot girl.
Yeah.
Where they're always kind of competing.
Yeah.
Like same thing with Wild Things. So it's like, that's kind of how she's been typecast. But I think every guy that I know that grew up has a very soft spot for her.
She's wonderful. She's fantastic. And she, you know, I thought she did a great job. She caught some heat from critics, but everybody, I mean, that film, they called me, like, we were praised in some critics, and then some critics called me like a poor man's Charlie Hunnam. And I was like, what are you talking about? That guy's a blue belt in jiu-jitsu. Get out of here.
What are your thoughts on critics? Like, obviously these people make a living, you know, criticizing stuff. And a lot of times, you know, it's, what do you think about
it? Yeah. Well, like, when Den of Thieves, to give you an example, was first released, the critics tried to hit us, but then the public attacked the critics. And we went from like 30% on Rotten Tomatoes, and the public went gnarly on them, to like 80-something, I think almost 90% fresh.
Yeah.
Like within days, because they're like, you guys, the people spoke, you know, much like they're doing right now.
Yes, they are.
Yeah. And so I try and take it with a grain of salt. You know, I read the good and the bad, but I don't know. I don't try and go down a wormhole.
So you do read them all. Because it's, you like,
I don't read, I sometimes, it depends on the project. Like if I stumble across like a project clip or something that's on like YouTube, I'll go and like troll the comments and stuff, and sometimes I'll write to them.
Just I love that.
I'm really glad you hated it. That's so sweet of you.
So like that movie too, American Violence, like how did you kind of get yourself in that headspace? Because it's like, you know, like every day, do you have a routine that's, because that's not your normal self. Like how do you get to be that person?
The process. Yeah. That was a tough one. Especially because like it was a pretty graphic, intense sexual assault on my character in a bathroom in that scene. And I remember the very next day I went and had like Easter brunch with my wife, with my wife's family. And I was just sitting at the table like this. Like I spent 16 hours just getting pretend raped by three dudes in the shower.
Pass me the eggs.
That sounds like a regular Friday night for me.
That was then. Like, this is exactly you and me. I'm going to get Drake's number after this.
Yeah, you guys are actually semi-neighbors. You're in Marina Del Rey, and Drake, you're by Sunset Boulevard.
I'm in Silver Lake, yeah.
Silver Lake, yeah, okay.
Oh, okay. I mean, we're closer than I am to you, Adam, but Silver Lake, like, Jesus.
Do you ever go to Silver Lake?
Yeah.
Only when I have to.
The same way. It's funny. I never go to the West Side unless someone's paying me a lot of money or my boyfriend forces me to go there to the beach or something.
It's funny too, Kay, because I remember like when I lived in Venice, you never went.
You don't cross Lincoln.
To that side. Yeah, exactly. You don't cross Lincoln. It's like,
yeah.
I never went downtown or did any of that. You just stay in Santa Monica.
That's the silver lining of COVID right now, is that I don't have to go to Hollywood anymore for meetings. They're either Zoom or I send in a tape and I get a phone call or a Zoom meeting and I can stay by the beach.
Epic. That's awesome. Yeah. Are you surfing at all?
Yeah. I mean, I haven't in the last month because I've been in Atlanta, but I still am surfing and trying to convince my son that the ocean won't eat him.
It's funny. It's funny. There's kind of that precipice that the kids cross where like it'll just click one day and they'll all of a sudden love it.
Do you remember how old you were when you started?
I think I was 9 or 10, I started a little bit later because I grew up in Hong Kong and England and then moved to Hawaii later. But I remember my first experience, I'd hang on my, we call it a calabash uncle, but it's just like a someone that's close with the family, but I would hold onto his back and we go to Makapu, which was a kind of a shore break wave, and we would boogie board. And he kind of got me started. I remember one day he took me out and it was big, and, you know, I got really worked and, you know, came up, was okay. And just kind of after that would ride my bike every day to Kailua shore break with my boogie board. And then as I got older, I'd start standing up on the boogie board. Then finally, I believe I was at the beach one day and somebody had thrown out a really shitty surfboard, and I grabbed it, waxed it up. And I think it was actually, now that I think of it, it was broken, but I just duct taped it, and it lasted for about one session, but I was able to stand up, fell in love with it. And and then my mom, I think for Christmas, bought me an old Makua Rothman hand-me-down. Yeah. Mom's the best. So she also.
Is she good?
Mom's doing fantastic.
Please tell her.
I absolutely will. Same thing with, you know, Dad. When I pursued music after college, he's like, okay, you're getting cut off. When I tell Mom, she's bought me a $1,300 Fender jazz bass. Fast forward years later, I'm endorsed by Fender. And I'm like, dude, without having, you know, that support system, the people, you know, there for you. Yeah. As an artist, it's
my
like...
My parents said the exact same really thing, hard. Too. My mom was all about it. My dad was like, absolutely not.
Yeah.
That's funny. I'm very lucky that both mine supported it. I think they saw from an early age that they're like, well, you can't do anything else, so let's push him towards acting.
Otherwise, yeah, and look at you now, man.
And look at me now. I'm not.
No, and you're crushing it, and every film has been better than the last, and I can't wait to see where your career goes.
I was doing a little deep dive on the internet, and I found that you are a magician. Is that correct?
Like trying to look for something around my desk.
We need a trick.
When I was,
we'll make this Zoom disappear.
Well, here, I'll take this Guinness cap right here. These things are easy to make disappear like that. You can just
whatever. What?
Oh my god.
You gotta show me that someday. Amazing.
It's funny because when you're young, it's super cool, and then when you get older, it seems creepy. I was just like, you used to hang around a bunch of adult magicians. Did they touch you?
Yeah, but you couldn't see.
I don't want to talk about it. Yeah, but you couldn't see. Look, here's my hands.
Now you see my penis. Now you don't.
You don't see my penis.
Next thing you know, you're in a bathroom getting raped by three men on film.
What? That's basically the precipice of your acting career. That's
all right. Hey, so Kiwi, did you ever have to do? Because I know you were saying like in the beginning you had to take any role, and I know you're family man. Did you ever have to do any of that like? You know, like
I wasn't
a light
always
porn
a family,
or anything. I know, but like, did you ever have to do anything that like any of those weird, like late night Skinamax kind of thing like that?
Softcore. Just say softcore.
That's
a podcast. Did you ever do softcore porn?
I don't like to say softcore. I like to say HBO. It was
fancy.
I may or may have not. Here's the story behind that. I did take a HBO Cinemax, aka softcore thing. Once I had not worked in a while. I think I was broke, and my father, you're gonna feel like an asshole for bringing this up now, my father had just had a stroke, and I didn't have any money to fly back and see him, and this job came up, so I did it so I would have money to fly back and see my father.
What a good you are amazing.
That's a good son.
I don't know how you guys found this because I never used my real name.
No, well, we didn't find it. You're telling us.
We just tricked you into saying it.
I didn't use my real name, so it should never be linked back to me, and no one should ever know what it was. And I think it was before social media. So
we have a whole team dedicated to deep diving the internet. We'll find it.
So you won't tell us your name on the on the movie.
No, but it was. It is another actor's name, which I didn't realize till after. So I hope he's not stuck with that credit. And it was the name of, I think, my high school. Because I remember the casting director telling me, I was like, do I have to use my real name? They're like, no, just think of like a teacher you hated in high school. And I thought of an English teacher I didn't get along with very well in high school. And so I used his name.
Is this HPA?
Mr. Odagaki.
But it's like, you know, I have, there's probably stuff that I've done. And I've seen that. And I was like, fuck, my acting's not really bad in that.
Can we see it, though? Like, can you tell us the name of it? Or no?
There's worse stuff on Game of Thrones than what I did in that.
Okay. Fair enough. And, dude, that's your craft. So it is.
Oh, there's worse stuff in West. I mean, there's.
Yeah. It was. No, HBO. Westworld is rough. Yeah. It's like everyone's nude. They're doing things. There was the robot kind of.
What's the Westworld scenes? Story that your wife is telling you to talk about?
No. She just wanted me to tell you that I had to blow a dude to get that part.
Oh, that's fine.
Perfect. Oh. Yeah, it's not, fair enough. And I mean, it was, hey, Kiwi, we're so happy to have you, man. It was such a pleasure to talk to you. And honestly, now after doing this, we're gonna have to do a bi-monthly catch-up and learn about.
I would really enjoy that.
We do have one fan really question that we have to ask before we go, though.
No way.
Yes. They said, as an actor, love scenes and nudity are part of the job. Do you have any embarrassing stories that you can share with us that happened during a love scene? The second part of that question is, does your wife or any past girlfriends, have they ever had any issues with you doing any love scenes on camera?
My wife doesn't, because she knows I'm getting paid. Past girlfriends, I don't think I've ever had a problem with doing... I've made it very clear that it's work, and if they can't accept what my passion is, what I'm, you know, what my oxygen is, what I do for a living, then it's not going to work out. But I'm very lucky that I have an incredible rock of a woman that supports me. I've actually, before we were officially married and had children, I did this pilot for Netflix in Peru, and she was on set about 5-6 feet away from me while I laid naked in bed next to a naked woman, canoodling and such. And then they would call cut, and I'd get off camera, and she'd like be like, "Oh, you should do it more like this."
Oh my god!
And so she's
love that. Rad.
I'd show you her, but she's in her pajamas and she's Brazilian, so she'll strike me.
they're fiery.
Yeah.
So where can everybody find you? Can we you have an Instagram?
Yes. The only social media I am on is Instagram. So if you're sending nudes to me on Facebook, that is not me. It might be Adam Taylor, actually.
That's my hidden account.
Yeah. My name is just actually, if you just type in Kaiwi, Kaiwi, I will for sure be the first verified one to pop up.
Boom.
Excellent.
Awesome, Kiwi. Thanks for joining us.
You guys, this is awesome. No, seriously, let's do it at least once a month. Even if
Absolutely.
Even if we're not recording.
Thanks for listening to the Uplifter Podcast. This show is produced and mixed by myself, Drake Peterson, as well as Christopher McCone of Resonant Media. Don't forget to subscribe on all podcast platforms so that you can get alerts when we are releasing a brand new episode. We have some great guests planned for you. We've got Cisco Adler coming on, as well as Kaleo and Yasad of the band Pepper. See you next time, y'all. Sun goes down and you're here to stay. Playing in my sound system got me feeling nice. Good days turn to good nights. I'm just down here living my life. I'm only worried about right here, right now. Talking about for me, time to live in the present. You know, I always have the chance to be grateful and count my blessings. That's right, you know, we only got one life, so bring on the good.
times I'm thankful, no doubt. Start with the here and now.
Here right now.
You know, it is all I've got. We're riding on a feeling, but the feeling don't stop. Find your peace of mind when the mind runs clear. All I really know is what I'm doing right here. A new day is upon us, feel the rising sun. Have a little faith, put me in your trust. The words of the prophets here written on the wall. A new day is falling.
Got me feeling nice. Good days turn to good nights. I'm just out here living my life. I'm only worried about right here, right now.
Right now.
Talking about